So I love the storytelling and the telling stories that gets done here on this podcast. And one of my favorite episodes was with Ron Garrett, who had reversed his type 2 diabetes and was living a completely different lifestyle now. And I love hearing that story. So I wanted to find more and more people to tell their story of how through nutrition that they've reversed their type 2 diabetes and insulin resistance and live in a completely different lifestyle now. And one of those guys is Miles. Miles lives in the Pacific Northwest. He's an attorney, lifts weights, loves motorsports. You know, he's a steak connoisseur. His Instagram, he's always making steaks and they're awesome looking. And he's super intelligent. And we have a great, I have a great time listening to his story and the process that he went through to lose all his weight and just become a super awesome, healthy cat. And I love hearing his story, and I hope you love his story as much as I did. Because if he can do it and I can do it and all these other guys can do it, you can do it. And I want you to remember that as you listen to his story. Thank you. Right on. This is Jeffrey with Mountain Man Nutrition. And we have an awesome guest, Miles Russell, on. Miles, are you there?
I am.
Awesome. So the reason I wanted to have Miles on this podcast is because Miles is one of those unique guys like myself who has reversed his type 2 diabetes and insulin resistance. And with that being the focus of this podcast mainly, I really want to have guys on here or women on here to tell their story of how they do it. Because I understand that if I can do it and Miles can do it, then you can do it as well. And I want you to understand as the listeners or clients that you can do that as well. So Miles, man, how you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Cool. This is a unique situation for me because this is this podcasting thing is so new, and we do different things all the time. So this is over the phone recording with both of us having the Anchor app. So this is the first time I've done this. So hopefully the quality will be good and we'll be able to do this again sometime. So, Miles, man, how did you get started? Can you give us a little history about yourself and how you got started in reversing your type 2 diabetes?
Well, so in 2011, I was in law school, and I think I had a year or two before that, I had been put on high blood pressure medication. And I went, when I got to law school, my health insurance changed and I ran out of that medication. And so I was like, oh, I should probably go get that refilled. So I go to the school because the law school had an insurance plan for students. And I go there, and as part of the intake to get health insurance and the prescription, the doctor's like, well, I can't just give it to you. I have to, do a test and make sure you actually need it. And they weighed me and like they told me that I was too heavy for the scale, and they had to use a special scale, and then took my blood pressure and then made me do a couple blood tests. And so I came back, I had to do those fasted, I'm sure you're aware about blood glucose tests. So I came back and they're like, well, you weigh, 460, 63 or 65 pounds, and your cholesterol is high and you're basically pre-diabetic or on that threshold. And, you have like metabolic syndrome, I guess obesity, high cholesterol, high fasting blood glucose. And the doctor told me, yeah, you do need medication, but that's just treating all these horrible things. And, you should try to lose weight. And that was kind of like a wake up call for me, if that makes sense. And so I went home and thought about it. And the doctor told me to do the DASH diet, which is, I think, dieting around stopping hypertension, which is like a very much like a plant grain based kind of diet, eating lots of spinach and yogurt and reducing saturated fat intake. And I tried that, and it didn't seem palatable, that interesting to me. My diet was very much like a junk food, standard American style diet, lots of pizza and pasta and like salty, palatable things. And so I was just researching diets on the internet because, I didn't want to give up. I wanted to like turn things around. And I saw an article online about him. It says like man loses 200 pounds. And I said, oh, well that I, you know, that's about as much weight as I need to lose. So I'll see what he did. And it led me to the Something Awful forum and Reddit keto and this like basically the low carb, high fat diet. And that's how I got started.
Well, that's a cool story. Cause not very often do we like go to the doctor and doctor, you know, actually points us in some kind of a direction. So the DASH diet is a lot of grains, the whole grains and pretty carby. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember like the doctor said, here's like a meal plan. And it was like a brochure and it was like eat whole grain, the classic, like eat whole grain, don't eat processed grain. So like do whole wheat pasta, do like, you know, the 19 grain bread, eat spinach, eat lots of veggies, fibrous veggies, you know, the lean protein thing, basically like, you know, chicken breast, you know, on dry bread with lots of, yeah. you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Like, you know, those whole wheat pastas and some of those supposedly whole wheat breads can actually spike your blood sugar higher than just like the crappy Wonder Bread or regular pasta.
Yeah. When you look at the glycemic index, I remember when I learned that, it's kind of surprising, you know, how like the quote unquote healthy things, they're just kind of they turn your sugar really quickly in your bloodstream.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what we're trying to avoid. So you were still in medical or you were still in law school at this time, or were you a functioning lawyer?
That was my the start of my second year of law school when I discovered that.
And then how did it continue? You found this diet and you started eating higher fat and micro protein and low carb. What was that like at the beginning? Can you describe that for our listeners?
Yeah. So I didn't, I mean, there was a lot of information available on Reddit, but there wasn't like, you know, as much as we have now, there wasn't a lot of like people who were like sources of inspiration or YouTube channels explaining it as clearly. And so I kind of jumped in, I'll cut carbs out of my diet. And I didn't have a food scale. I didn't, know all what foods had a certain amount of carbs in them. I just knew I need to avoid sugar. You know, I can't drink soda anymore. I can't have breading. So if something has like breading on, I got to watch out for that. But even that, I was still kind of lazy. Like I would go to the bar and get boneless wings, which are still kind of lightly breaded, but just even taking the effort to kind of consciously reduce carbs got me started. And that got, you know, I went through the whole keto flu thing where I felt really miserable and had headaches. And so for the first week or two, I remember that. But I started losing weight. It just started working just by like not eating carbs. I think the first thing that what it did for me is it really regulated my appetite. And I realized how much I was hungry all the time and how much I wanted to eat. And so once I just started reducing the carb intake, my appetite just kind of, you know, it didn't go away, but it definitely became reduced.
Yeah. And that's a pivotal information, especially for people just getting started. Especially this really, it kind of hooks people into the ketogenic diet or the low carb lifestyle, is because you do drop 10 or 12 pounds really quickly. And that's because carbohydrates retain liquid in your body. They retain inflammation, retain water. And when you cut those out, you tend to like just liquidate all this water pretty quickly. And it's pretty substantial. Could be anywhere from, you know, 5-8 to up to 25 pounds. Just in the first couple of weeks. I know I personally lost like 12 pounds in 2 weeks on my first 2 weeks of cutting out carbohydrates.
Yeah, for me it was I bought a scale on that only went up to, I think, to 445 pounds, it said. And I remember the first time I stood on it, it said error because I was too heavy for it, because I think a doctor told me I was like 465. And then I think by like day three of keto, I was down to 444. So I lost about 20 pounds in the first week. And of course, that's like tons of glycogen and water and some fat. But that just initial thing really gets people motivated. I think what's important, though, is that people need to realize that it is a lot of water and it's not going to be that fast. But that first week, that's really important for just like, hey, it's working. Something is going right.
Yeah, well, and I try to put like losing weight on the back burner because of all the other health benefits that reversing your type 2 diabetes and insulin resistance has, you know. And that's especially like in the first 2 weeks, reducing all that inflammation in your body, in your heart and in your digestive system, getting rid of all that inflammation is huge for your like ultimate optimal health. And so that's just number one off the bat. Yes, it's a weight loss, but it's even more important than that. It's about the ultimate health of your body. And it's a huge first step.
Exactly.
So going from there, what else did you notice besides not being hungry, of course? And that's a big step is, you stop eating every 2 hours, every 3 hours, and you stop, at least in my experience, you stop, thinking about and preparing and looking forward to, and the mental process of, what is my next meal? How am I going to pair it? Where am I going to get it? Staring at the vending machine for a half hour before you get up and go get something out of it. What was the next step for you?
Yeah. So for the first things I noticed, were again, just the losing the water weight and then my appetite, getting regulated. Like I used to wake up just first thing in the morning, starving and I would eat sugary cereal. Then I'd be hungry by 10:30, I'd be in class hungry and then want to get a snack. I'd eat lunch at school, then go home and get home at 3 o'clock and be hungry and kind of have dinner number one, as I used to call it, to myself. Yeah. And then my girlfriend would get home and we have dinner number two with her. And so I was eating so much food. And I think just seeing my appetite change, I realized how much I was eating before, because you don't really think about it sometimes. You just kind of normalize it. And so that was step number one. Two is that, a lot of things just improved. My joints hurt less. I had, some skin stuff that kind of just cleared up. I guess one of the symptoms of having high blood sugar is you get I think it's called Anthrin's Nigerians. I forgot how you pronounce it, but it's a little, skin discoloration on your neck. That went away. I think I had the very first indication of that, and that went away. My skin cleared up. I started sleeping much better. So I was sleeping so poorly, I didn't even realize that. So I was just less tired. I joined the gym and started lifting weights, and I just was recovering better, less inflammation. And so I just kind of felt wow, this is amazing. So I'm going to keep doing this. And so I ended up losing about 40 pounds by the end of the year. I started in October, and by January I was down to 400.
Well, I like the way you did it too, is because it was a slow and gradual, okay, I'm adding this, I'm taking away this, I feel better, so now I'm going to start doing this. I'm noticing now down the line I'm sleeping better. Hey, I got more energy now. What am I going to do with this energy? Let's get into the gym. And this is a really great process to do, is slowly add things in slowly. Take away things slowly, add things slowly, and by the, you turn around and, man, you've lost 40 pounds. So at first, what were you eating? And I see what you're eating because I follow you on Instagram a lot. But what were you eating right off the bat early? What was your meal prep when you first started?
Well, it's a lot different than now. So back then, I just didn't know. I didn't really know how to cook very much. I mean, I think my cooking skills were limited to literally making eggs, making pasta, heating up frozen pizza, eating, just very simple, college type food, a college kid could make, top ramen. So I didn't have a lot of cooking skills. My parents didn't grow up doing a lot of cooking besides making breakfast. And so I kind of just went to the store and was like, okay, I'll start reading labels and I'll start eating hot dogs. And I would get a lot of hot dogs, some hamburger patties. I would go to the bar and get buffalo wings a lot, because that was really easy to get. I would go.
You didn't realize the buffalo sauce had a bunch of sugar in it yet, did you?
No, it wasn't perfect. It was just about reducing my carb intake at first. And without even really strictly tracking, I just mentally, I guess some people call that lazy keto, but that wasn't a phrase that I heard back then. But just mentally, it was I need to keep my carbs low. And so it was a lot of getting burgers at restaurants and not having a bun. I didn't eat a lot of nuts then. But I think I started eating more nuts, getting some salami, just a lot of processed, easily available foods that you didn't do a lot of cooking. That was what it looked like at first. I would go to the dining hall. And my law school had a dining hall next to it. And I would just say, hey, can you make me a piece of chicken or a piece of meat with some cheese on it? And you don't want a hamburger? I was like, no, I just want the meat. Or I'd go to the salad bar and say, I want a salad, and just give me some bacon and some ranch and some eggs. I wasn't tracking calories. I was just it was kind of slowly getting it used to what it meant to be a low carb diet without like any sort of perfection.
And that's super great because it's a start, right? It's like you're educating yourself, you're getting started, you're doing it, right? And it doesn't have to be like grass fed beef right off the bat. It doesn't have to be perfect right off the bat. Taking the steps and the baby steps is what's most important here. So you don't have to go from like crappy garbage, horrible diet to perfect awesomeness, you know, in one fell swoop, because that's really a setup for failure. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you can try to do too much at once. I mean, I didn't even know like what grass fed meat even meant back then. Like I didn't know anything about food as much as I do now. I didn't know like omega-3, 6, 9 fatty acids or what vitamins were. I kind of had a layman's understanding of that. You know, I'm kind of educated, but I wasn't like an expert in food. And I didn't know, like, I knew that like if you peed on those strips, it would test your blood. It would show ketones in your urine. I knew generally what ketosis was, but I didn't really, you know, wasn't really concerned about all the minutiae. I just wanted to start and try it and see if it worked for me. And the fact that it was working for me was kind of like what kept me hooked on it. I think looking back, I'm kind of glad I didn't try to do everything perfectly, like track every calorie and everything and, you know, eat the most optimal perfect diet. I mean, I see some people who they try to change their whole life and go from the standard American diet. It's like a whole 30, you know, perfect diet. And I think that's too much. I mean, some people can pull it off and I think that's great, but I knew I couldn't. I've never been able to like make a complete life change anywhere in my life. And so I just want to take it easy and figure it out.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I've seen so many people like you that couldn't cook, didn't know how to cook, didn't really even want to cook, to developing themselves as, you know, foodies that love to cook and actually post a lot about it and show what they're doing. And they've really developed themselves as really, really good cooks. Do you consider yourself a foodie now?
I don't know if I would use the word foodie, but I do consider myself someone who really appreciates and enjoys food, especially now that, you know, I eat so much less of it, but I want to make sure that it's good food. I think, like, I have some friends who, you know, every now and then they're trying to lose weight or they're talking about this diet or that diet. And I say, everything I eat is amazing. And that's why keto works for me. Some people say, you know, it's not sustainable. And I say, I don't eat things that I don't like. You know, like someone was saying about how they had to eat some sort of carrots and they didn't like it. I was like, why are you eating something you don't want? And they said, well, it's because it's healthy. And I say, well, there's plenty of things that are healthy, but, you know, find what's healthy for you that you enjoy. And I really have tried to do that in my life. I like certain vegetables. I don't like other ones. And so I find things that I like that I find delicious. And so I really improved my cooking skills tremendously. And so I just really get a lot of pleasure from making myself a really nice steak or using my sous vide to kind of experiment and come up with something that I really enjoy, because I just really have really come to appreciate quality. I don't necessarily mean that I'm eating like everything grass fed and organic this, but, you know, I just feel better that way. I feel better eating more, you know, actual like nice pieces of meat than say pepperoni sticks all the time. I feel better when I have, you know, some high quality food. And so I just really have really enjoyed learning how to be a better cook. I think I would like to become a better baker so I can make more like keto baked goods every now and then, but that's something that I'm still working on. And I think it's like a lifelong process. You don't need to become a master overnight. It's just everything you do is an experiment. Someone once asked me like, hey, I want to make a steak. Like what should I do? I was like, just go buy a steak and try cooking it. You know, just do it and then see what happens. And the worst thing is you get an overcooked steak, but it's a delicious experiment. Just keep trying it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. You know, I've been doing this for over a year now in this type of cooking and being a professional chef. Like I just, you know, do what I do because I know what I like. I know what my family likes. I know how to cook. And it's mostly whole foods and things like that. And when I've done the keto breads and the keto baking and stuff, I tend to eat, like overeat and like crave it like it's regular bread, which is interesting. But because of the kids and different things like that, I'm starting to experiment more, you know, making homemade ice cream, making cheesecakes and like regular keto breads. So it's an interesting process to learn. And I've been doing this for over a year. And I just, you know, now after this long experimenting myself, you know? So I think you're right by it's a lifelong process and you don't have to get it done right away. So with that being said, like, when did you start like really experimenting with food and understanding that you could cook and then you could upgrade your quality of food that you're eating by learning how to cook?
Well, it took a while because I kind of started out pretty slow and didn't really like lock into the diet hardcore for a while. So for the first couple of years, I was kind of lazy. I mean, I was losing weight, but it was very gradual. I'd say my diet was very much a work in progress. I ate out a lot for most of my meals just because I was so busy in law school. And then when I graduated from law school, I came home and was living with my mom while I was studying for the bar because, you know, I didn't have a job, didn't have any money. And so I was just living with my mom. My mom is very, she had done a low carb diet and was aware of what foods were available. And so she would buy stuff for me. And so it was a lot of bacon and eggs, very easy stuff to make. Lots of like sandwich meat with some mayonnaise, burgers with no buns, hot dogs. It was very much like minimalist. And that worked for me because I don't need a lot of variety. Never really have. Even when I ate a standard American diet, it was the same kind of food over and over and over. I've never been somebody who had a really like, oh, I need lots of variety or color on my plate in order to be satisfied. So that simplicity worked for me. And I just kind of learned more like, oh, that pork rinds exist or Blue Diamond almonds exist. And Quest bars came out and I could have, if I need something sweet, I could have a Quest bar. It's just kind of expanding my knowledge base. And then once I got on my own and passed the bar and started working and was able to have a set of food budget, I started, you know, reading about cooking and recipes. And I think the first recipe I mastered was like this pesto chicken recipe that I found online. And then I kind of went from there and just wanted to slowly improve my cooking skills over time. But then I realized I like to cook, but I don't necessarily want to make a lot of exotic things. It's not really my thing. I like simplicity. So like a protein with a vegetable is kind of my standard thing. And I grew up not really, steak wasn't a big thing in my family. And I remember every now and then my mom or dad would try making it and it would be overcooked and chewy. So I always had a bad like relationship with steak because of that. And then I remember, thinking, well, a steakhouse, the steaks are great. You just gotta learn how to cook it. And so I made it my goal to learn how to cook steak. And I kind of accomplished that. And then my next goal was to learn how to cook pork and kind of go from there. I just set a challenge for myself and figure out what I can and can't do, what my limitations are.
Wow. I tell you, I really like the process. So tell me this, what was the most difficult aspect through this process for you?
I would say the most difficult aspect of the keto diet for me was just psychological. So I mean, my life improved a lot at the same time that I was discovering this, just because, I graduated from law school, I got a job, became gainfully employed. My career changed. I just learned how to budget better. I think what's true is that it's really difficult to like kind of change one aspect of your life for the better without having some spillover effect and vice versa. We tend to do everything, the way we do one thing. So, a lot of people quit drinking or quit smoking or start working out. Like you kind of improve a lot of areas of your life at once. And so my life really improved for the better because I got in better shape. I started spending my money more wisely. And I remember thinking at one point, like, wow, I've really accomplished a lot. I don't want to go backwards. And there's a lot of people who fail. They gain weight back. The diet doesn't work for them. And I never wanted to go backwards. And so I think psychologically that was the challenging thing. Like you don't want to like fail. But you can't be afraid of failure. You kind of have to experiment, and challenge yourself, but just kind of accepting the fact that, I did do this and I'm in great shape and I know what it takes to lose and gain weight. And so when I tried to start going to the gym and put muscle on, I knew I had to eat more food. And so when you're focused on losing weight for so long, trying to gain weight or improve your body composition is very, very daunting because you don't want to relapse, That was, so for me, that was the challenge. And then I guess some of it was just kind of dealing with other people in your life who are resistant to you changing, which was kind of surprising to me how much pushback I got. So just, and that's again, a psychological thing more than anything else.
Yeah, interesting. How difficult was it with your peers When they're seeing you, you go out to dinner on a business thing and you're eating a particular way that's weird to a lot of people. How is the social aspect for you of all this?
So the people who don't know you, you know, that you when you make a new friend, they kind of accept, you know, you kind of define who you are to the world as long as you're congruent with how you present yourself. So if I meet somebody and I say, I'm a carnivore, I don't eat, all I eat is steak. They may think it's weird, but at some point they're like, okay, that guy's just weird. But if you have a friend who's always known you one day and one day you say, I'm going to do X from now on, they're going to be really resistant to that change no matter what it is, because in their head, you are a certain thing. We kind of define people by what we know of them. And so when you change yourself fundamentally, a lot of people are resistant to that. And they either consciously or unconsciously want to kind of get you back to where you were. And so they'll kind of test that new boundary to see how real it is. Some people do it out of jealousy. Some people do it just because it's like their natural instinct. They're not trying to be mean. Some people do it because they don't like what's happened, or they're worried about you, or they're projecting their own insecurity. And so with my dad, I love my dad, and he's a great supporter of me and my career and fitness. And he always wanted me to be in better shape. But I think even he was like, whoa, you're getting too skinny, because he was always the one who was in better shape. And I think it was weird for him to be, you know, when he got older and lost his six pack, to have a son who's all of a sudden like strong and in shape. Or I had a couple of friends who were vegetarian, and they're like to them, vegetarian was healthy. And then I'm telling them I'm in the best shape of my life and I barely eat vegetables. They're gonna be like, that's not true, because that is a threat to what I believe about myself. And so they kind of push back. Or had some friends who are like, you used to be fat. And like, I'm like, yeah, I did used to be fat, you know, but I'm not anymore. And this is why. And people be like, well, don't you miss X, Y, and Z? And I said, well, I maybe, but I also don't miss being fat, and, you know,
with no energy or no sleep.
Yeah. And so this is what I've chosen, because this is what works best for me. And so like, that was just kind of an interesting transition. And then some coworkers were like, you know, that looks so unhealthy, you know, I can never lose weight eating all that greasy meat. And I was like, this is how I lost all the weight, eating the greasy meat, you know? And they're like, that doesn't make any sense, you know? So
it doesn't make any sense to the, normal Western dieter that still follows the, you know, paradigm of low carb or high carb, low fat diet.
Yeah, and some people thought it would be kind of like a trend, like, oh, you're still doing that fad diet? And I was like, yes. And they're like, that's not sustainable. And I'd be like, I've been doing it for 4 or 5 years, and yep. I'm in the
and
best
you look
shape
amazing
of my life.
Too. I've seen your before and after pictures, man. It's profound. Just seeing, like, you're a whole different human being now.
Well, amazing. Thank you. I think that's something that's hard for me to accept. I've gotten a couple comments on Instagram lately, and someone's like, wow, you look amazing, or – you know, there's a great person on Instagram named Bacon and Megs, and she said, you really look at home in your body. And she's talked about how difficult it can be to kind of get used to your body. And I think that's really true. You're just used to being a big person. I think I heard someone on a different podcast talking about how, you know, people who are fat, like there's a study where they ask them to put some barriers up that you think you can fit through, like physical barriers. And the people who used to be fat will always put them bigger than necessary because they're not used to mentally being a smaller person. And so it just takes a lot of, and I'm kind of like an arrogant, you know, cocky person. That's just my nature, who I am. But still, it's hard for me to kind of be like, yes, I'm jacked and in shape. You know, I still view myself as kind of like not like that kind of person. And so just accepting that you've changed is difficult.
Yeah. How did you do that? What are some tips about the mental and emotional aspects of losing weight and feeling like a different person and dealing with all this, some people who may or may not be negative, or, you know, just dealing with your own mental processes? What was your go-to on that?
Well, I think a lot of it is I've always been kind of a stubborn, you know, my way. Like, you know, if there's a theme song to my life, it'd be, you know, I did it my way, Frank Sinatra, for better or worse. You know, I made a bunch of mistakes. You know, I got really fat. You know, I've had some bad friendships. I've, you know, made poor decisions, but I've made a lot of great decisions. I got a full ride to college because I worked hard in high school. I put myself through law school. I passed the bar. And I had help along the way, but, you know, for better or worse, a lot of things I've done in life, I've just done it from self-direction, which I'm proud of, and also regret in certain cases. But a lot of that was self-determined. But I think I just kind of, at some point along the way, I discovered kind of a stoic philosophy of you just kind of have to, you know, be disciplined more than anything else. People are going to push back on you and just be like, well, I'm going to do me and not necessarily care what other people think. I mean, I just learned a lot about psychology through work because I deal with a lot of mental health issues in the field of law I practice, and just kind of learned more about having more healthy emotional boundaries and just kind of accepting that it doesn't really matter what people think. You know, I'm not, you know, they can have their feelings as long as I'm not out there hurting people. You know, the fact that they're uncomfortable with something, and that's really their problem they have to work through. And if someone's uncomfortable with me changing, that's their problem. It's not that I have to focus on doing what's best for me, even if it means like alienating people, right? You're going to lose some friends and piss off some family members sometimes when you improve yourself. Self-improvement is something you're doing for yourself first. You know, it's like self-love. And that may minimize how much energy you're devoting to other people. Like if you have friends, like typically, like, you know, there's a cliche phrase that you're the average of the five people you spend time with. If you're a really overweight person, odds are you're not spending most of your time with healthy, in shape people. I'm not saying that's true, but your friends probably aren't, you know, CrossFitters and, you know, paragons of health and fitness, because, you know, you're probably people who live a similar lifestyle to you. And again, that's a generalization, right? So you may have friends who are like, oh, my friend is losing weight and I don't like that. And so pushing back against it. Or like if you drink, if you're an alcoholic, you probably hang out with a bunch of drunks. And if you're trying to clean your life up, you may have to move on from those people. If you smoke cigarettes and you're trying to quit, you can't go to the cigarette smoke break in your office, right? And so you have to accept that when you change, you can't be the same person you were. I can't be Miles who was overweight but skinny. I'm going to have to change a lot of who I was. Like let's say, for example, you wanted to get out of debt. You know, I see people post on Reddit sometimes in the personal finance forum or online, like, hey, here's my issue. I need to get out of debt. And everyone's like, you need to change how you view your life and your budget sometimes. And that's very difficult. You want to have Netflix and eat out for every meal, but you also don't want to be going into debt. Well, if you don't want to be going into debt, you're going to have to limit your expenses. And you may have to change your priorities in life and become a different person. And so I think I was just like, accept that I'm not going to be Miles from 5 years ago. I'm not even going to be Miles from 2 years ago. I'm going to be Miles now, and kind of just accept that and let the process change me for the better. And I'm a different person than I was a couple of years ago, just for a lot of aspects. And that can mean that some people who I was friends with don't really connect with me anymore. Maybe my relationship with my parents changes a little, or my brother, or, you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the most amazing things that anybody said on this podcast, and it's so true. And having to deal with other people's insecurities or low self-worth or misery loves company, you know, if you get skinny and I'm still fat, you know, I don't like that at all, because it just shows my insecurities, you know, and people have to understand that and just roll past it. It's really difficult to emotionally and spiritually leave people behind, but sometimes it's absolutely necessary.
Yeah, I it's sad, but it's true. I mean, you're going to change in life, and you know, your priorities change. I mean, I've been on both sides of that. I mean, I've had friends who have started families and have kids, and that becomes their life is raising their family. And I'm like, hey man, I want to go like party this weekend or do this, and like, no, I got to have kids, and so they can't be the, you know, bad parents, you know, who are going to be partying when they have kids to worry about, because they're focused on being parents, and they accept the fact that when they became parents, that's their new identity. And and they've really, and I admire them because they've changed to really embrace that. Even if it means that I don't get to see them as much or do as cool things I used to do with them, because that's their new life and they've accepted that.
Yeah. It is about priority and just, you know, like losing the weight or reversing your insulin resistance or becoming optimally healthy, it has to become a priority or it's just not going to happen. You know what I mean? You can stop eating bread. You can stop eating potatoes. You can start exercising more. You can do all this, but it has to become like a forefront thought in your process. You have to be speaking it into existence. And most importantly, you have to do the individual footsteps every day to make it happen. And it doesn't have to be a big leap. It's just one little step at a time, like you've demonstrated through this whole podcast, is just a little bit at a time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like a small series of things that compound over time. And I don't want to be like mean or harsh, but the way I look at it is like, and again, these are all quotes I've heard somewhere on the internet or from someone else, but I think the best way of looking at it is that if it's important to you, you will find a way. If it's not important to you, you'll find an excuse.
Yeah.
You know, people will say like, oh, I could never do that. And what I hear is I'm afraid of trying that. I don't think I could, or I don't want to do that. And I'm not saying that keto is the only way that works for anybody. You know, I know plenty of people who thrive and have lost weight with other diets, but they were committed to making it work for them. They found a way to make it work for them. They didn't find excuses. And that's true for a lot of things in life. And so that's what it takes. It takes kind of discipline more than anything else. It's not really about motivation. It's about discipline. And it's about, again, I'm always stealing all this stuff from other people I've seen on the internet, but that's the whole point of this. That's why I'm on the podcast, is so someone can steal this from me. But it was, you know, we are what we consistently do. You know, we're not, if I consistently wake up every day and say, man, you know, I really want to not go to the gym, but I'm going to go to the gym today, it makes it easier for me to go to the gym tomorrow. If, you know, when I choose to make one small change every day, yeah, am I going to be perfect every day? No, I'm going to step back some days, but you build momentum. And then over time you become that person. I think there's one of my great sources of inspiration is Matt Vincent. And he used to be a Highland Games competitor. He's got a fitness YouTube channel and brand. And he posted, he's got a podcast too. And he was talking about like the bad days, you survive those bad days because you have 100 good days. And those 100 good days are just small things when you choose not to drink 6 beers, you choose to have 4 beers, you know, or whatever your vice is, right? Choose to go to the gym rather than not going to the gym. And then one day it's just a bad day, you know, your anxiety spikes, you're depressed, you know, you want that piece of cake. So you go eat that piece of cake. That one day, the next day you can go back to what you're doing because you had those 90 days before that of those small steps. And then as long as you get back to it, whatever it is, you'll be able to keep that momentum going forward because of all the small things you've done that compounded.
That's awesome, because it's not like we go back to the beginning. You know what I mean? You've lost 40 pounds and you're feeling great. Got brain, you know, there's no more brain fog. And, you know, you go to a party and somebody throws a piece of cake in your mouth and you eat it. Right.
Yeah.
It's not like you go back to the beginning. You have to start all over. You just, you know, go all about your day like you normally would with your exercise and your diet or whatever you got going on in your life. You don't go backwards. There's, you know, you just keep the momentum and don't beat yourself up for having a damn piece of cake.
Yeah. You know? I think the key is not beating yourself up and just, you know, accepting that it's not like an overnight thing. You know, I went on vacation recently to Ireland. It was like a once in a lifetime trip. My mom had never been to Europe. My mom's family is Irish. My grandfather's family comes from County, or my grandmother's family comes from County Mayo. And my mother wanted to go to Ireland, and she wanted to go back and return my grandmother's ashes. And that was going to be her first trip to Ireland. And knowing I want to have Irish bread. I want to have Irish this and Guinness that. And I'm like, well, my whole like diet going to be derailed because I'm going to be in Ireland. And I told myself like, no, you've learned how your body responds. You know that you're not going to feel as good. You know that you're probably going to gain some weight, but you also know that you can get back on the diet when you come back home. And so when I went to Ireland, I had Irish food and, you know, I got bloated and gassy and I realized, oh yeah, carbs are making me feel negative and I feel lethargic now. And, you know, I feel more anxious and unease. But I know that when I get home, I can get right back to what I was doing. And I know that why I did it, because I felt better. And so when I came home, I got back on plan and, you know, life returns to normal. But I only was able to do that because I'd proven to myself through all those small steps that I knew what was going on with my body and how to master it.
Right on. Hey, so do you do any testing at all? Do you test your blood sugars, or did you used to? Do you test your ketones?
I don't do any testing. I've thought about trying it more now just for geekiness. And it's weird because I tend to be like a data person. Like I have an Excel spreadsheet with like body fat and like measurements and all that, because I'm focusing more now on putting on muscle mass, but I've never been a tester. When I first started, I did those pee strips, but then at some point along the way, I decided, I'm seeing there's a Reddit called Keto Gains, and they talk about, you know, chasing results, not ketones. And I realized, well, what matters is ultimately, you know, am I meeting my goals? How do I feel? You know, and so I would go whenever I went to the doctor, you know, for my checkups, I would get my blood pressure checked and my blood sugar checked and my cholesterol checked. And that was fine because as long as those levels are being looked at every now and then, all that really matters is how I feel. And I felt like, well, I don't really need to know what my ketones are, because did it really matter? I lost 200 something pounds, you know, without ever checking my ketones. So why do I care about that now?
Right.
And so I understand the value of that. Some people want to see like, oh, did this Quest Bar impact me? Did this thing impact me? And I just focused on how I felt and learned along the way. So it just never was important to me. I thought about it just so I know, but at the end of the day, I kind of know by how I feel. You know, some people freak out like, oh, I think this Chinese sauce might've had some sugar in it. I was like, you would know if it had sugar in it. You know, either you can tell or you can't, you know, and if you can't tell, you know, does it even really matter? You know, just keep moving on. I mean, I'm not saying that someone who's diabetic and really needs to know it. People tend to be worried about the smallest thing having the smallest gram of sugar in it sometimes. And in the grand scheme of things, you know, it's not going to really be a big issue. If as long as you're honed in on most of your diet, that one, you know, product may have had some sort of impact on your ketones, you know?
Right. Exactly. Are you doing any supplements?
Yeah, so I supplement big time with salts. I learned hard. As someone who lifts weights and is pretty active, if I don't, I feel miserable, and my gym performance really suffers. So I go to the gym in the morning, and when I wake up, I just immediately have an Nalgene that the night before. It has salt, and by salt I mean potassium salt and some sodium. And I take a magnesium supplement, and I take that in the morning. I usually mix it with Mio, but lately I've been trying some Gold Ultima and Zipfizz. Just a different thing, just out of for an experiment's sake, because it's a little bit cheaper than buying Mio's. But I take salt. I take magnesium at nighttime before I go to bed. And then I take a K2 D3 multivitamin. I'm up here in Pacific Northwest where it's very dark in the wintertime. And I noticed that if I don't take a lot of vitamin D, then I get more seasonal affective disorder.
Yeah.
So I take vitamin D and K2, which I think are, you need, they kind of, there's some sort of synergy there.
There's definitely a synergy there. And
yeah,
you need both of them to upregulate the vitamin D.
Yeah. So I take those together. I take a multivitamin, even though I'm kind of dubious about its effect, because I've taken it and then not taken it and haven't noticed any difference in my life. I'm not saying that it's possible to have vitamin deficiency without noticing it physically, but I've never really noticed a difference. I definitely notice a difference when I don't take salt. Definitely notice a difference in the wintertime when I don't take D3. I mean, it sounds kind of like hard to believe, but I definitely start to feel more depressed and down when I don't get enough D3 in the wintertime.
No, it totally makes sense to me. And I like a super high quality multivitamin because different deficiencies like zinc and things like that, you might not notice over a month or mm-hmm. 6 months, but you know, 3 years in, 5 years in, 10 years in, of having a nutrient deficiency is, you know, detrimental to so many things.
Yeah. I take a multivitamin more like a Pascal's wager kind of thing, if that makes sense, because I just want to be safe.
No, I totally get it. And it's definitely recommended to take that multivitamin, especially because the food that we have now, even the organic small farm stuff, it's just not as nutrient dense as it used to be. And supplementation, I think, is just absolutely necessary, especially when you look at, like, you know, some medical reports out there, the things like zinc, you know, like 80% of the people out there are zinc deficient, you know, or iodine,
mm-hmm.
a crucial mineral for so many different things in our body that we're deficient in. And people don't get it and they don't know it because they're not testing for it. And 20 years down the road, you know, they got like stiff joints and things like that that could have been prevented. So ending the podcast, what is your go-to takeaway for our listeners, for the listeners out there? What is one thing that you want to share with them from your experience that you think they must know?
I would say there's two things. I would say this is a long-term process. And I think it should be a long-term process. Think of it as like when someone wants to be financially successful in life, if someone wins the lottery and they're handed $1 million or $100 million, odds are they're going to go bankrupt because they don't know what it takes to manage the money. And it's, even if you want to lose a bunch of weight, it's far better to learn how to do that slowly over time rather than just having it all melt away overnight. And if you wanted to be, you know, become a financial financially savvy person, it's probably better to learn through small incremental steps. That way, you know how to manage the money, what it takes to get out of debt versus having someone just buy you out of debt. So just embrace the process and then fall in love with the process. That's the key. Like I'm trying to right now kind of maintain or put on some muscle mass. And if I weigh myself every day, some days I'm up 5 pounds because I can hold a lot of water. Some days my scale says you've lost muscle mass. And I know that it's a slow and steady process. And then every day it might be a little bit jarring, but what am I doing over time? And focus on the big picture and just trust in the process. The other thing I would say is that just do it. You know, people always ask, you know, I don't have enough information, or I don't know what to do, or, you know, they want to ask a bunch of questions. Just do it. Learn by failure. You just try it and see what works and what doesn't. You'll learn more about yourself. It's key, because I can tell you what worked for me, but I can't tell you what's going to work for you. And that applies to everything. You know, if I want to cook a steak a certain way, well, just go buy the steak and try it. I want to and see what happens. Or, does this vegetable taste good? No, just try it. Find out for yourself. Will this, is too much protein going to make me feel bad, or too much fat? Well, just try upping your protein and fat and see how you respond. Just don't be afraid of experimenting. You know, don't be afraid of trying it on yourself, because it's only going to have to be a personalized journey for yourself. And the more you learn and own the process versus having someone tell you what to do, the more successful I think you'll be.
Thank you, Miles. That's awesome. And I really appreciate you being on the Mountain Man Nutrition podcast. To end the show, tell the audience how long did it take you to get to the weight that you really wanted to be at, and what it was that weight?
I started keto in 2011 at 465, and I got down to the lowest weight I've ever been as an adult, about 202, in 2016. So that was about 5 years. And today I'm like 219, 220 at less, same body fat percentage as I was at 202. So I bulked up and put muscle on. So I think my ideal body weight is like lower 200s, like 210, 220. And so it took me, 5 or 6 years to do that. And I could have done it, faster, but I just did it slowly, because that's what I was capable of doing. I think that's what worked best for me. I know some people have done it much faster, and I congratulate them. But for me, my journey took 5-6 years.
Awesome. I really appreciate it. And thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Have a great day and good wishes.
You too.
Hey, this is Jeffrey with Mountain Man Nutrition again. And if you like the podcast you just heard, tell a friend. Share it on Facebook, share it on Instagram, share it on Twitter, wherever you can share it, tell somebody who can benefit from it, because that's why I'm here and that's why I'm doing this podcast, is to benefit as many people as possible. Millions and millions of Americans have suffered from type 2 diabetes, insulin resistance, and continue to suffer. So if we can benefit them in any way, shape, or form with this podcast, I want to do that. So please share it with your friends. Get on iTunes and give me a 5-star rating if you liked it, 5 stars. And then write a little blog about it, or a little say something about it so other people can find it that you're not sharing it with. You know, the more people who listen, the more benefit we can do for others, and you can be a part of that. And I'm asking you to be part of that. So let's share this podcast as often as possible. Thank you very much, and good wishes to you.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.